Hi everyone, my name is Sean, and you're listening to Incredible Discourse. Today we're going to talk about the Japanese language. If you're familiar with the Japanese language, or if you've ever seen the Japanese language, you know that it is incredibly difficult for some people. For others, it's pretty easy. It's not. That's a dirty lie. It's tough for everybody. Because of the intricate rules for conjugating between the alphabet and the long history of changes and modifications that have been made throughout the history of the language. It's one that is difficult, but it's complex and has such a rich history and legacy that it's worth going through a little bit of the history of it, because there are some very, very interesting aspects of the Japanese language that really shine once you understand them in the context of how it developed throughout time. So today we're going to really focus on the modern reforms for the Japanese language. And by modern reforms, I mean since the Meiji period, since the imperial family took control of the country again and brought some sort of order to it. We're going to break this down into three eras, time periods. These will be the Meiji era reforms, the Taisho era reforms, and the Showa era reforms. There are also a bunch of different actors, and the names are very close to each other. So we're just going to go through a list of some of the characters we're going to see on today's journey. Number one, the Ministry of Education. Number two, the National Language Council. Number three, just a coalition of newspapers. A coalition of newspapers. Number four, the Interim Committee on the National Language. Number five, the Imperial Army of Japan. Number six, the Allied Forces High Command. That's America. And number seven, the Deliberate Committee on the National Language. And of course, the Deliberate Committee is very different than the Interim Committee on the National Language, because the national language is really important. And that's today what we're focusing on, the national language of Japan. So the first reforms that take place were in the Meiji period, or in the very beginning. And this is what's referred to as Genbun Ichi. So the unification of speech and writing. This was the first move towards modern Japanese, and it was established in Edo, and based on the dialect spoken in Edo, which is today Tokyo. Prior to this movement, and kind of continuing after, but more specifically prior to the Meiji unification of speech and writing, different regions in the Japanese archipelago were almost unintelligible to each other. So if people in Edo wrote a letter and sent it over to someone in Osaka, it would be very difficult for the average person to read and understand the dialect because of how different they were, and especially in writing, because not only do we have pause, we're going to look at the systems of writing. So not only do we have kanji, which aren't used uniformly throughout the Japanese islands at this point, but we also have hiragana and katakanas, which are two phonetic alphabets that were not used. There was no standard kana system in the Meiji period, and especially prior to the Meiji period. So these reforms tried to set a standard for kana usage and kanji use. So in the 1860s, people still had difficulty understanding dialects from different regions. The written language was also still heavily influenced by classic Chinese writings and classic writings of Japan, you know, the oldies and the goodies. Get your Genjis and your Manyoshus and all that good stuff. The end of the 19th century was a turning point for modernizing the Japanese language. The Meiji government realized that Japan, as it was now, would not be able to compete as a nation-state if it didn't first unify its language. And the first publication to be written in the new vernacular was Yukigumo. It was Yukigumo, of course. In 1887. But it wasn't until 1895 that the term national language would even be coined. And we all know this today, it's Kokugo. National learning. Well, no, not national learning, that's the national language. National learning comes later. Skip ahead a couple years, and in 1901, the Ministry of Education set a standard dialect for the Japanese language. And this dialect was based on the Edo dialect. The next year, the National Language Council was established. The following year, in 1903, the first textbooks for schools were written and published in the standard vernacular that was established by the National Language Council. and these were issued throughout the country. The next big step in the evolution of the language was the vernacular completely replacing local dialects in public life, and this happened in 1910. In 1913, the National Language Council was resolved by dissolving. But it turned out that the National Language Council created recommendations to reform the written language as well. And these writing reform recommendations were published as Kogoho and Kogoho Beki. This is the grammatical foundation of Japanese as we know it today. What these new standards did was to wipe out regional dialects throughout Japan in the first half of the 20th century. The use of dialects was punished and purposefully wiped out in schools prior to the events of World War II, and afterwards it was really looked down upon as people who were uneducated, who used these kind of dialects. But we're going back to World War I, because in 1919, the Ministry of Education increased the number of kanji to be used. In 1921, a coalition of newspapers published a statement proposing to limit that number of kanji. They said 2,600 kanji is way too many kanji because I got to make typeface for all that kanji. You're not going to make typeface. It's a lot of typeface for all this kanji. I ain't got the time to do that. It's expensive. You know how much it costs to make these little things? It's a lot. And you know what? It just makes my business, it makes it difficult to run. I think we should change the whole language to make newspapers easier to produce. And that's what all the newspapers said. And you know what? People listened to them. Because the same year, the Interim Committee on the National Language was formed. Although this was not an official reform, the recommendations were published. The recommendations of the newspapers were published in 1921, which is the year we're talking about. And they called it Kanji Seiryan o Teishosu. And this would heavily influence the list produced in 1923. Spoiler alert, in 1923, they make a list, a new list of kanji. Because in 1923, pressure from the newspapers pushed that interim committee on the national language to compile a list of essential kanji. And we all know how important essential kanjis are, especially essential kanjis on the front lines. But in 1923, that front line would have been Imperial Japan's colonies. So take that as you will. The interim committee ended up compiling a list of essential characters, and this list ended up being around 2,000. But it failed to be implemented because the day that they were going to start pumping these new reforms out, the Great Kanto Earthquake took place. And although not official and not officially put into practice, this reform, or attempt at reform, would prove to be one of the most influential that the Ministry of Education would produce prior to the war. Of course, the Ministry of Education is only linked to it because the Interim Committee on the National Language was a part of the Ministry of Education. If you're new to Japan, remember this. If you're in Japan, form a committee. Committees, very popular. The year is 1925. The newspapers started using a slightly modified version of the 1923 list, which consists of 2,108 characters. Because they saw that 2,000 and they were like, you know what, if only I could get 108 more, then it would be real sweet. And this reform failed because it was terrible. They wanted to get rid of kanji and replace it with a series of dots over and around kana. This is kind of the way that Arabic is written. But I don't know if you noticed this, but no one writes Arabic in Japan because they've got kanji. That's how they do it. And no one could read these kana with the little dots all over them, so it was thrown into the garbage where it belongs. In 1931, the Ministry of Education modified that 1923 list and brought it down to 1,856 characters. Once again, the implementation of this reform was interrupted by external events. Because, fun fact, in 1931, that is when the Manchurian incident occurred. So this brings us to 1940. And throughout Japan's colonization exploits, the need for soldiers grew exponentially. And the need for soldiers to be able to read kanji and write kanji also grew. The problem is that because of the increased need, the education requirements kind of suffered. So you were getting soldiers who weren't fully educated. But then again, kanji's really hard, so, I mean, you don't, can't really blame them. But the inability of soldiers to read certain kanji led to disastrous events. And in 1940, the year that we're in, the Imperial Army released regulations relating to the simplification of weapon nomenclature and terms. I'm just going to go, let you hear that one more time. The Imperial Army released a regulations relating to the simplification of weapon nomenclature and terms. So that means by 1940, enough problems were happening that the Imperial Army had to simplify the language so people would stop killing themselves. And not on purpose, on accident. You know, you get a bunch of soldiers, you have them move some munitions, they move the box the wrong place, they handle it wrong, and bad things happen, you know. So apparently enough problems occurred that they had to step in and change the way they wrote explosives, you know. It's like the Claymore mine. It says point towards enemy. That's what they did for the Japanese writing system. But turns out the hard work of the Imperial Army didn't do enough. And in 1941, a summary of kana usage relating to weapons was published. So I guess they gave up on kanji and were like, you know what, we're going to kana. Maybe people will stop messing up. The following year, again, in 1942, the interim committee was replaced, they got rid of it, by the deliberate committee on the national language. And this committee established a list of standard kanji. And this list was 2,528 characters. But then later that year, in December, they decided that they messed up and wanted to go change it. And then they changed it to 2,669 characters. So at this point, the Japanese language has had a lot going on for it. And so do the people of Japan. They got a war to fight, they're busy, they got things to do. No one's really got time to sit around and fix the language, simplify it for people, because more pressing things are taking place. So nothing really changes with the language between 1942 and 1946. Because in 1946, MacArthur shows up. And he shows up with the Allied Forces High Command, and they issue an order to limit the number of kanjis down to 1,500. Probably in some sort of attempt to get American soldiers to learn how to read kanji. And they're like, fuck, these GIs are definitely not going to be able to read kanji. So can you make it easier for them? Because they're kind of not good at English. So I don't think they're going to be good at Japanese. Also, I don't want to have to do a lot of work. So can we make this easier? And they kind of technically had that happen. So based on pressure by the Allied Forces High Command, the deliberate committee went about to edit the 1942 list, the one that was 2,669 characters. The deliberate committee was reestablished by the Allied Forces and given the task to fix it up. This was the first time that there had been an external pressure forcing language reform, which is a game changer. And this list that was established in 1946 was entitled The List of Kanji for Current Use, and it contained 1,850 characters. This reform also streamlined the kana system, limiting the use of each kana to one single mora. This way you don't have a particular kana, let's say, if everyone pictures the kana for na in their head. And right now, every time you see na, it's pronounced na. But previously, it could have been pronounced we, or yo, or you, or ni, or tsu, something like that. And just like that, uniformity had come to the Japanese language. But now that a list had been created, 2 years later, in 1948, the list of on and kun reading for the kanji in current use was formed. When the list of kanji for current use was published, it contained all official kanji, and only those kanji could be used in official documents, such as new names. Like if you made a new name, you had to pick something from that list. Which was problematic, because most people had characters that were not on that list. And because of naming traditions in Japan, if you pulled a character from the parent's name and it wasn't on that list, you couldn't name your child that. So people weren't too happy about that. So to remedy this, Well, they waited a couple years, but they tried to remedy this in 1951 with an amendment to the list of kanji for current use, and this was a new list called the Name Kanji List. Real creative with the names of lists, but at least you know what you're looking at. And between 1951 and 1979, there were several other minor amendments to the list dealing with names and lesser use characters. And the final reform, taking place in 1981, we have the List of Kanji for General Use, aka the Jōyō Kanji List. Originally, it contained 1,945 characters. Easy to remember, 1945. Since then, the list has gone through slight alterations, most notably in the area of adding characters for name usage. Make sense? The language has also entered into an age of standardization with the limiting nature of computerized type. So it becomes very difficult to use characters that you're not able to type in a digital environment, which limits the number of overall characters that can be used. And there you have it, folks. The history of the Japanese language reforms of the 20th century. It's a lot of information, I know. That's why we broke it up into several parts. And it's something that's really interesting to think about because of how difficult the Japanese language is today. And this is after all of the reforms and the revisions and the modifications have been made to make it much more uniformed and easy to learn. So if you think about having to learn Japanese 100 years ago, it would have been a completely different animal. Thank you very much for listening, watching, and being present. If you like this video, hit like and subscribe. If you liked it a lot, hit the subscribe button again. Don't hit it twice. Don't hit it unsubscribe. Send a comment. Send me an email. Leave a comment. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies. Tell your dog. That's pretty much it. I'll see you next time. I'm out.